I'd like to share with you something that a lot of people don't realize, some of the pins that we all tend to put into that balloon. And to do this, I'll have to share with you a little illustration. Imagine the following. We have a young fellow, he's married about 6 months, and on his way home from Kollel, he says to himself, you know, Baruch Hashem, I'm so happy. I married her, she's so put together and so normal, and Chasdei Hashem, and she's not one of these flighty, excitable, nervous types. Oh, Baruch Hashem. Anyway, so he 6:30, he comes home, and he opens the door, and when he opens the door and walks into his apartment, he sees his wife up on a chair. Up on a chair, and she's, Shani, what's the matter? What's the matter? What? Shani, what's the matter? What's the matter? Chaim, Shani, what? It's nothing but a cockroach. And, look how big it is! Huh? That's what you're scared? Please. You're kidding me, right? You're up in the chair because of that. Yeah, really? He goes over to the cockroach. Oh, man, are you sure you really meant that? Okay, good. Scene one. 2 weeks later, Chaim's in the yeshiva. He's a big masmid. He does not even bring a cell phone to yeshiva because it's bittul Torah. And one of his friends comes over to him with a phone and says, listen, Chaim, I got to find out your wife on the phone. Something really, I don't know, something's going on there. So Chaim takes the phone to his ear and says, yeah, what? Dear, what? Dear, what? Shani, what's the matter? Chaim, there are two of them. Come on, quick. What? There are two what? Two cockroaches. Come on, please. Are you serious? Please. He hangs up the phone and he says to himself, I don't believe it. She wants me to leave the Beis Medrash? She wants me to stop learning because of two stupid bugs? He gets in his car and he's fuming. And he's furious and there's smoke coming out of his ears. He walks into the apartment and there she is up on the chair. Okay, lady, here, you're happy? I hope you're satisfied. And he walks out the door, goes back to the car, goes back to the yeshiva to learn. Okay, here's the question. Who is right? Who is right?
Cockroach.
The cockroach is right. maybe the cockroach is right. Who is right? Was he right? Listen, it's Bittul Torah. You know, look. You know, come on. It's take your husband home from work or from yeshiva because a cockroach. Or was she right? You know, after all, she's kind of scared and it is frightening to be in the apartment alone with a cockroach, a young woman. So who's right? Okay. So I have a feeling that we could do one of those gender divides on this question, where most of the guys would agree that he's right, and most of the women, I think, would agree that she's right. Okay, very good. Now, I want to share with you something very interesting about that. I'm not going to do an actual poll, but here we go. When my kids were little, I remember very clearly that the girls were afraid of bugs. And whenever there was a bug, they would call their baby brother to come by, get take care of it, and he would come and play. They just have to make sure he didn't eat it, because he used to... And I don't know why it is, but in my family, the girls are all afraid of bugs and the boys aren't. Do you know why? I don't know why, but it doesn't matter. But that's a reality. So here's just an interesting observation. Let's assume that it wasn't her in the apartment, it was him. And let's assume it wasn't a cockroach, but it was a German shepherd. Would he be up on a chair? No. He'd be out the window on a fire escape, right? A German shepherd! Ah! Do you understand why this is one of the biggest mistakes that we all make in a marriage? I judge my spouse based on my reality. And it's true, he does not have a problem with cockroaches. But guess what? She does. And it doesn't matter if it's rational, and it doesn't matter if it's sane. If that's where she's at right now, that's where she's at. And this reality is that we have a tremendous, tremendous habit of judging our spouse based on my reality. Now, it cuts across gender divides in a big way, but it's not just gender. It's almost everything in life. We judge the world by my standards, and I assume my wife is going to do the same. By the way, on the smallest thing, it happened again today. I'm, again, married almost 30 years, and Shabbos morning, I like to bring my wife coffee. I usually get up much earlier, and when she gets up, I bring her coffee. Every time I go to the fridge, I have that little, You see, everyone knows that coffee tastes much better with thick creamer. At least half and half, but for sure it's got to be whole milk. And every time I make her coffee, I have to resist because guess what? She likes her coffee with skim milk. But I know it tastes so much better with half and half. I know with creamer it'll taste so much better. And I want to bring her, right? And I have to remind myself, I may like it with creamer, but she likes her coffee with skim milk. And as strange as that sounds, we do this all the time. My reality is the reality. And if my husband doesn't get it, so whatever. He's got a problem. My wife doesn't get it. That's her issue. And I call this being dismissive. Oh, come on, that's a guy thing. That's a woman thing. That's my husband. That's my wife. And if you watch yourself, I think you'll find that we do this all the time. And I have a little solution to this problem. A little background first. Archimedes was a mathematician in Athens in the old days, and the legend has it that the king was presented with a crown, and the question was the crown solid gold, or was there silver that one of the guys snuck in? So the king brought Archimedes in and told him, solve this problem, tell me whether there's silver in there or not. Now, Archimedes knew that gold is heavier than is silver, and he thought and he thought and he thought, and he couldn't figure out how do you do it? So anyway, as legend has it, one day he's in the bath in Greece, and he's in the public bath there, and he says, Eureka! I found it! Eureka! And he runs through the streets of Athens, he found the laws of buoyancy, and he solved the solution. Okay. Now, since that time, it's been an accepted word in science, Eureka. And most people think that scientific discoveries are found with a moment, wow, Eureka! I'd like to share with you, almost every scientific discovery throughout history was preceded by different words. Almost every discovery in the history of science was preceded by the words, that's strange. A guy mixed two chemicals and expected X, but instead it was Y happened. That's strange. And then he went in through the process, studied and thought and learned, and then he came out, Eureka, I found it. And I'm not just saying this. Louis Pasteur, you go through penicillin, Alexander Fleming, how he found it. It just, all of a sudden, things were dying. The bacteria were dying. By the way, microwave oven. So Perry Spencer, he was working on a magnetron. And he suddenly, when he was working on this magnetron, he discovered that his pocket, there's something sizzling. And he reached into his pocket, he found the chocolate bar was melted. He discovered the microwave. And almost every scientific discovery is preceded by the words, that's strange. And then the person studies the phenomenon and makes the discovery why it is. Okay, folks, are you ready? Would you like to know what are the two most important words in your marriage? Let's answer that question. What are the two most important words in your marriage? I'm sorry? Thank you would be a good one. I'm sorry is a good one. Right? Anyone else?
You're right.
You're right, right? I have a better one. It's even harder to say. I'm wrong. Yes, dear. Oh, yes, dear. Okay. Now, all of these are great. They're all very important. Thank you. I love you. Oh, that's three words. Okay. Three. Love you. I'm sorry. You're right. I'm wrong. Yes, dear. All of these are great, but I believe that they're not the most important. I believe the two most important words in your marriage are the words, that's strange. That's strange. You see, when your wife does something that's really, I don't get it. She's a normal, sane girl. Normally she does things. Why is she reacting that way? When you say to yourself, not to her, when you say to yourself, that's strange, what you begin to do is begin to open yourself up to discover her world. When your husband does something that's really irrational, that really makes no sense, and you're just about to say, oh, that's him again, but you say, that's strange, because normally he's a responsible guy. Normally he's so attentive. That's strange. You then open up the possibility of discovering the inner world of your spouse. And you begin the process of learning what matters to your spouse, learning how they function, how they work. And what you discover is that men and women work very, very differently, have very, very different value systems. But even within the same gender, people are different. And learning the inner world of your spouse and learning that my spouse isn't me. And what I value doesn't mean my spouse values it. And what I consider important doesn't mean my spouse does. When you learn that world, you're a lot closer to a much, much better marriage. And I believe that this is something that requires a lot of attention. If you train your tongue to say the words, but again, not outwards, but inwards, that's strange, you then have the opportunity to climb into the world of your spouse. You then have the opportunity to be far more happily married. And I'm going to make it a little bit easier. I'm going to start with the gentleman, and I'm going to help you understand a little bit more some of the things that women probably understand as intuitively, but most guys don't. I'm going to help you a little bit because, again, but let me just make an important point here. Each human being is different. So you have to become a student of your spouse, not a teacher of your spouse. No. A student of your spouse. You have to understand their inner world. You have to train yourself to understand it because any rules about gender differences don't necessarily apply to your spouse. And if they do, it's not in the same way because every human being is unique. But nevertheless, I want to share with you some insights into some of the gender differences. Before I do that, though, just a quick aside. Ladies, what's worth fighting about? What? Nothing. No, yeah, right. Sean Bias worth fighting about? Religion? What's worth fighting about in marriage? The answer is nothing. Why? Because if you fight, if you lose, you lose. And if you win, you lose. There are issues that are worth discussing and communicating and reaching a compromise or deciding what to do, but nothing's worth fighting about. However, that's general news. Gentlemen, I want to give you some advice. Do not fight with your wife. Not because it's, you know, bad for men. No. Do not fight with your wife because I guarantee you'll lose. She's so outmanned you, so out. She's an 8th-degree black belt. You'll lose every fight. You know why? She's going to remind you of everything you did wrong since Maisa Bereishis. She's going to remember and recount for you everything. I don't care how long you're married. I once had a woman tell me, you know what my husband did? I said, with all due respect, man, it was 20 years ago. Why is that? Do women have better recall? Do women have phenomenal memories? You look at statistics and studies, don't show it to be true. Women don't seem to have better... Why is it that a wife will remember, recall, and recount? Meaning say it to you right, you know, step by step. Why is it? You had a kasha, right? Okay, I'll share with you the answer. The answer is that women have a different emotionality. Women are more emotional. They feel things to a greater degree. And that which happened 5 years ago or 10 years ago, she thought about, spoke about, went over, and it's a part of her reality. It's not that she has a better memory. It's that it made a far bigger impact on her. Because generally speaking, women are far more emotional. It's almost like if you want to think about it, men see the world in black and white, women see it in color. And what your wife experiences is very different than what you experience. And what she feels is very different than what you feel. And what I say to young fellows when they get married is, your wife is not a crybaby. Chazal tell us, be careful with onas isha, be careful that you don't oppress your wife. Why? Because since her tears are closer, therefore the oppression to her is closer. And Rashi explains exactly why. She's more emotional, there's more emotionality there. And therefore, be careful with your words. Not because she's a crybaby, but because she feels it more intensely. She feels the pain, she feels the embarrassment, she feels the barbs penetrating much more than you do. And that's an important thing to remember, and it's an important thing to be attuned to, that women's emotionality is different. But it's not just that women's emotionality are different. Last time we spoke about the fact that women speak about different things than men do, and they speak about it for different reasons. We spoke about the fact that very often a wife will speak to connect, to bond, and a husband usually speaks to communicate, but there's another very important difference. You ever notice that your wife will go on, and you'll say to her, come on, dear, I mean, we're not going broke, we're not like, we have plenty of money, and, you know, please, the kids are not really the most impossible things ever created, and, you know, honey, you really have to stop exaggerating. You ever notice that your wife goes through these emotions? And I want to share with you something very, very important to understand. Women feel emotions more acutely, and they speak about it, usually to refine the emotion, to define it, to get a sense of it. But when a woman's finished, she's a little bit more calm. And just watch women do it with women all the time. They talk about their problems and their issues, and they fetch, they complain, you know, and the other friend goes, And somehow afterwards, the woman's calmer. Maybe the second friend she'll call and go through the same routine. And if the third time, she's, you know, or fourth or fifth, she's pretty calm and different. She understands the emotion, she now relates to it differently, and it's in her compartment. And then she comes home to her husband, instead of calling her girlfriends for this, and she crutches about her day, and her husband says, listen, just solve the problem. You don't have to fetch about it, just deal with it. We'll solve it. And you ever notice that husbands are very quick? Okay, now, I can't make this as clear as I wish I could make it. But what you're doing is you're not allowing your wife to express her emotions. You're not allowing your wife to feel what she... And you're not allowing her to share with you. And it took me personally a long time. I remember very clearly after 10 years of marriage when I sort of like made this discovery and I learned to do something that women do all the time. You know what that is? Oy. Oy. Really? Wow. That's terrible. Oy. Oy. That must really hurt. Oy. Oy. Really? Really? Oh. You know, women make noise, you know, listening noises. It's actually, sociologists have studied this. There are listening noises. Guys go. And what's the biggest complaint? You never listen. You know, what do you mean? And he'll tell the whole conversation. You just said, da, 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 da. You see, you're not listening now either. You see? Yeah. So you have to learn how to listen with that empathy, with that, yeah, oh, yeah, I hear. Oh, yeah. She's sharing with you. She's sort of downloading, and she's coming in tune with what she's feeling. And you have to understand that that's a real need in your wife. And if you do that, you'll find that you connect better. She feels much more comfortable with you. Your marriage improves. And you have to train yourself. And it's not foolish. It's not silly. It's something that's very important. Okay, that's one issue. Let's go on for a moment. Okay. Imagine the following situation. A couple are going to a wedding, and she goes up to prepare, and he's working on Shalom Bayis. He says, I'm not, no matter what happens, no matter how long it takes her, I am not going to say a word. And she's up there for 2 hours already, and he's sitting downstairs, not saying a word. I am going to keep my mouth shut. Shalom Bayis is too important. And it's 2.5 hours, and oh my goodness. I ain't saying nothing. I ain't saying nothing. After 3 hours, she comes down the stairs. He bites his tongue and he says, okay, dear, you ready? And they get in the car and they go to the wedding.
Good.
Now, what would you call him? Brave, a Gibor like Shimshon, a Kovish Yetzer, a wise man. Maybe. You know what I call him? Dumb. If your wife spent 3 hours trying to make herself look beautiful, wake up and smell the coffee. It's very important to her to be beautiful. And the words you say are, wow, you look great. You look beautiful. Gentlemen, don't believe what your wife says. No, I don't care. Why? She doesn't care. You know, in this country, $426 billion a year are spent on cosmetics, on makeup and beauty. $426 billion. Don't tell me that women don't care about what they look. She's up there for 3 hours because it's very, very important. And gentlemen, learn to compliment your wife because it's a big deal to her. And if her husband thinks she's beautiful, it matters in a real way. And train your tongue to say the words if you don't already. And now, I have to say something. Generally, it's much easier for a man to compliment his wife about her looks. Chazal tell us, chein isha be'enei baila. A woman has a chein, a special appeal. Rashi, look at the Rashi that says, afilu hi mechueres, even if she's ugly. Hashem gives a certain chein to a husband, and it's pretty easy for a husband to look at his wife and say and feel that she's beautiful, assuming his eyes are on his wife and not other places. And that part's not so hard. But there's another thing you have to train your tongue to compliment, is her clothing. Now, this one is a lot harder because, as you know, women dress for women. Right? They don't dress for guys. They don't dress for men. Right? If a woman comes to the chasana, oh, wow, where'd you get that? The outfit's gorgeous. Wow, where'd you get it? I never saw guys do that, you know. Oh, great tie. Oh, where'd you get that tie? Oh, yeah. Oh, that, oh, wow. You know, I never, okay. Okay, so here's the observation. We're married about 5 years. This is the early 1990s. And the fashion became these big bows on the back of women's dresses. But I mean big bows, like huge bows on the back of a woman's dress. And it looked like Mickey Mouse. It was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever seen. And it was just dumb. Okay, fine. Anyway, lo and behold, my wife comes home with a dress one day and says, how do you like it? And here's that bow. Bigger than big, huge. And what did I say? Wow, it's gorgeous. And the bow is the best part. Now, I did a good enough job that my wife didn't discover. I hope she doesn't watch the tape of this. What are you, 25 years ago, you didn't like the dress? I did. I just didn't appreciate it as much as I could have, maybe. Okay. So here's the point. The point is, it's very likely that your wife is going to wear something that you look at and you say, And you and I know, because you're not a student of fashion, but it's really good. So just train your tongue to say the words, wow, that's, you look great. You are beautiful. The clothing looks great. You look great. Wow. And gentlemen, what do you think is going to happen? She'll wear it again. A bigger bow. No. That's not. No, that wasn't what I was going to say. I believe when you look at your wife and say you're beautiful, she will light up like a light bulb. She'll start to shine. You'll just see her change. You know why? Because again, as strange as it sounds to us men, it is very, very important to her that she be attractive, that she be seen as attractive. And by the way, ladies, as an aside, it's very important that you remain attractive to your husband far more than, you know, we have the mirrors on the wrong side of the, you know, everybody gets, you know, make sure it checks their hair, checks their shape, they'll check everything before they leave the house. But when they come in, it's very different. It's important that you remain very attractive to your husband. There's an interesting story. Someone sent me an email that Georgie had a woman come to her, a Hasidic woman, and the woman paid for the latest style of wig, and the next year she came again and ordered a new wig, latest style, and the third year she came, and Georgie found out that this woman never wears the wigs. Never! She doesn't wear them. And she's coming year after year paying a lot of money for the wigs. And so Georgie couldn't resist in the fourth year when the woman came, and she said, I feel I have to answer the question. I understand you don't wear the wigs. Why do you buy one every year? She said, don't you understand? My husband is out there in the world. I know what he sees there. And when he comes home, I want to look beautiful for him. I only wear the wig in the house. Outside I don't, but I wear the wig in the house. Wow. Do you hear the wisdom of that woman? It's a rough world out there. You don't want your husband looking here, there, and everywhere. Make sure that you remain attractive. Make sure that you keep yourself up. You'll do it anyway, but it's important, and it's important not just for the outside world. It's important in your house. But here, my point far more is that, gentlemen, you have to notice it, and you have to tell her, and you have to let her know. Okay, now, here's an important observation. I deal with people at different stages of life in different situations. I was at Frum Divorce. They asked me to speak at their Shabbaton, so I spent the whole Shabbos. It wasn't really there that I made the observation. I made it long ago. After a divorce, you ever notice that every single guy is abusive? Every guy who ever got divorced is abusive, and almost every woman is controlling. Almost every single time when you try to find out the information, I'll say it's the second shidduch, I want to find out, you find out the guy was abusive, and usually also find out the woman's controlling. Why is that? Why is that? I know these people. He's not abusive. She's not controlling. They're nice people. Why is it that that's not the report you get? So, to understand this, I want to do round three. Let's go back to our superhero, Chaim, who's big masbin yeshiva, and it's round three. He comes home to his wife, Shani. It's a month later, and he walks into the apartment again, 6:30, opens the door, and there she is sitting on the couch smiling, beaming. He says, hi, how you doing? Good, Baruch Hashem. What's up? Chaim, you won't believe it. What? You'll be so proud of me. What? Do you remember a month ago I called you and the caller to come home? There were 3 cockroaches today. I went to the pantry. I took the can of Raid. I sprayed them. And I am so proud. To which Chaim says, oh, yeah, very impressive lady. You killed a couple of cockroaches. That's what you're bragging about? That's what you're thinking? Okay, fine, very good. And suddenly, she loses it. She starts calling him a heartless creep. You're the biggest creep in the world. I can't believe I married you. Why'd I ever get stuck with you? And he says to himself, whoa, what is her problem? I thought she was stable. She has emotional issues. She's losing it. What? All I said was, you know, it wasn't such a big deal. I killed the cockroach. Am I wrong? Okay, of course he is wrong on one level, because what he's not understanding is what was going on in her brain. The first time when he walked into that apartment and she's up on the chair terrified, and he walks in and he says, that's what you're afraid of? Do you understand? She was waiting for her husband to come home. Well, my husband came home, Baruch Hashem. He's going to help me. And not only doesn't he understand that I'm in pain, he makes fun of me, he mocks me. What kind of creep? And she keeps it inside. And then 2 weeks later, when she calls him home from the colo, and he comes in and he says to her, I just hope you appreciate it. And he walks out the door. She says, this is what I'm working for? To be married to such a creep, such a heartless creep? And in her mind, like a tape recorder, again and again and again, it plays until the third time when he says something casual, something that's not really particularly bad, and suddenly it boils over and she loses it. Okay, folks, here's something that's obvious, but it requires being said. I guarantee that any time that you have an attacker in a marriage, that attacker will be a victim in but a heartbeat. See, it doesn't matter who shoots the first arrow. It doesn't matter who starts. I guarantee you will receive back as much as you gave, if not more. And if you don't get this, you won't even realize. Do you remember that woman I told you was grammar obsessed? And she constantly corrected her husband. And she couldn't figure out for the life of her why her husband didn't want to have a relationship with her, didn't want to be with her. She couldn't get it. Because what she didn't understand is that she was constantly hitting him. And of course, he was just a creep and he's a bum. Remember that guy I told you about with the phone call, the first Tashir? I said, Rebbe, she left me. She left me. She won't even tell me why. I met that guy 3 years after. 3 years afterwards. Now, by the way, if you don't remember, that was the guy with a temper. I don't know why she left me, and the reason I almost dropped the phone because I've been schlepping that couple from marriage therapist for 2 years to get him to shut his mouth. The most offensive, he had a temper. Every once a month or so, he'd lose it, but the most offensive words would come out of his mouth. Okay, 3 years later, I meet him, and he says, we're talking about something. He says, listen, Hashem wanted me to marry that crazy woman for whatever the reason. I had to grow in some area, but that's Hashem's plan. And now, Baruch Hashem, I'm moving on to my next marriage. Yeah. He didn't get it. She was crazy. She was nuts. She had psychological issues. She had problems. Because, guess what? He didn't see that he was stabbing her. He didn't perceive that. And gentlemen and ladies both, I have to share with you, anytime you're involved in a situation with your husband, with your wife, you will always, always feel that you are the victim. You can't help it. And you know why? I'll make it very clear. What is the difference between a philosophical question and an nisayon? Right? What's the difference between a philosophical question and an nisayon? Okay? Anyone know the difference? Okay, it's really very simple. A philosophical question is when you break your leg. Hashem, why? He's a good person. He has to spend 6 weeks at home. Hashem, I don't understand it. That's a philosophical question. When I stub my toe, ow! That's a nisayon. Because my pain is very real. It's very easy to be an armchair philosopher about Yenim's, the other fellow's situation. But when I'm in pain, that's no longer philosophy. That's very real. So folks, here's the point. Anything that you'll ever do wrong in your marriage, intellectually, you'll understand it. But anything you get back, emotionally, you'll feel it. And guess which one's more powerful? Don't even guess. Because it doesn't matter. You may intellectually know what you've given out, but emotionally, what you're receiving back is incredibly more potent, more powerful, and you'll always remember. You know why every guy is abusive in a marriage? The reason is because anytime there's going to be fighting, and a woman's only going to remember what he said, and again, she's going to have much better memory than he does anyway, and she's going to perceive him as abusive no matter who started the fight. Okay, now I have some words of Musar that I have to say. Remember last time I talked about a fellow who leaves his socks on the floor and his wife for the 10,000th time screams at him, Chaim, we got to pick up your socks! We're married 20 years now, we are finally... Okay. And I said that, she has a choice to make in that marriage. She either is going to embrace, accept that that's his nature, or she's going to suffer. Okay, so I want to share with you first an interesting perspective. Number one, who's right? So I got news for you. He's dead wrong. Listen, buddy, grow up. You're 40 years old. Grow up. Pick your socks up. And if you're such a slob, so work an extra job and get full-time cleaning help to pick up after yourself because your wife doesn't have to be your servant. However, like any situation, like any issue in a marriage, there are two sides to the equation. His job is to change, and her job is to remember that change is very difficult, and as he has his flaws, she has hers, and the more she can overcome it and ignore it and learn to embrace it and say, that's my husband, the better off she is. By the way, the only right response I ever heard, I was in Dallas, I was just recently talking on this issue, and one woman called me up afterwards, and she said, I just want you to know, if it were my husband, it wouldn't bother me at all. And she explained why. He has a heart condition. I'm so happy he's alive, it wouldn't bother me at all. That was the only right answer I ever heard. But anyway, the point is, any issue, any annoying habit, any coming late, coming on time, there are two parts to the equation. Your part is, if you're causing the problem, you have to change. Your spouse's part to accept it. Both parts are there. And everything would be fine and well if we weren't dealing with one little point. Have you noticed how much I've been throwing the blame on the men's side tonight? Anyone notice I've been beating up the men tonight? Yeah. The guys, not a single woman. No. The ladies say, no. You didn't pin me again. I got a ton more. I could add stuff. You think you beat them out? I'll heap it on you. All the guys saying, yeah, you've been beating us up. We're like, Well, the women are saying, oh, okay, good. Okay, so anyway, I have been specifically attacking the men. And I saved all of my energy, all of my ammunition on the ladies' side for one issue. One issue. Here we go. Do you remember last week I mentioned that you just got to accept your husband? And your job in life is not to change him? So first let me share with you the questions that came up because probably you don't remember. Now again, let me make it clear. Your job in life, your mission in life is not to change your husband. You change yourself, don't change your husband. Right? The more you work on the relationship, the better your marriage is. The more you work on your spouse, the more you wreck the relationship. Okay, so I made it pretty clear, I thought. So the first question was, well, what if I do it nicely? No. Don't change your husband. It's not your job. The next question was, well, what if I use positive motivation? No, it's not your job to change your husband. Well, next question was, what if I use humor? No, it's not your job. Don't change your husband. It's not what you're supposed to do. It's not the right approach. He'll take it in a bad way. It's going to bother him. It's not going to get... So the next question after that was, what if I use consequences? You know, if you do this, I'll do it, right? No, don't change your husband. Now, I don't think a single guy in that chair last week didn't get it. Of course, on the other side, I'm not quite sure because I get an email right afterwards that reads like this. I'll read the words. Rabbi, I enjoyed the shiur very much, and I'm not arguing. I'm just asking so that I can better understand. If I can't do it nicely or with humor or with positive influence or with consequences, then how am I going to change him? I'm not making this up. Oh, and here's a better one. 2 days later, I get another one. If so many women are commenting on this, despite all the time spent on this topic, then maybe it's not that we're not understanding you. Maybe we just don't agree with you. Oh. Could that be? Is it possible? Yeah, it is. So here we go. Let's try it. Ladies, you know much better than me. I got it. Okay, I'm fine. Let's do a little experiment. We'll play a little let that strange game. Let's imagine for a minute your marriage is going real well, you're a good koof, everything is fine and dandy and everything, and your husband leaves the socks on the floor for the 10,001 time. So what do? You give it to him, but good. And what happens to your marriage? Oh. See, men do not take well to criticism. Men do not take well to being mothered. Men do not take well to being treated as if they're children. And the more you feel that your husband is just another one of your kids, and somebody's going to finally teach him, the more you're going to wreck your marriage. Now, ladies, don't misunderstand what I'm saying. If he's doing something that annoys you, I get it. He's supposed to change. You're supposed to embrace it. But half of the problem is not that act itself. It's an attitude of, and I've heard women say this to me on a regular basis, if I don't teach him, how's he ever going to learn? He's not going to learn. And you're not going to teach him, and he won't learn. And it's not your mission. And again, I don't want to be too heavy over here, but I saved everything, right, ladies? Not one criticism. I didn't say one thing against women other than this. Don't change your husband, please. Again, dealing with issues, we all have issues. Everybody has. But you have to recognize that the more you can embrace it, the more you can accept it, the more you're just able to go on, the happier you'll be, the better your marriage will be. And I believe there's a tremendous yesod that we learned from Yaakov Avinu. And that yesod is, he came to the Kala empty-handed, despite the fact that he was bringing the greatest gift imaginable. He's bringing an Olam Haba that's hard to imagine. And he knew it, and she knew it. Nevertheless, it's not nice. It's not shein. It's not proper. And understanding that there's certain behaviors and certain activities that are just not acceptable. I wouldn't do it to anybody else. Why do I do it to my spouse? And you have to work again on the romantic love. You have to go out once a week. You have to work on the respect. You have to train yourself to be respectful. And you have to work on the appreciation. The appreciation, the easiest exercise is you write down on the list. You write down, I know, what if I change them? How? No. You write down on the list the things that your spouse does for you. And gentlemen, if you're honest, it won't take you 10 minutes, it'll take you a half hour. Because you'll write, and you'll write, and you'll write, and you'll write. And then you work on appreciating your spouse, and then you work on the flip side of that. Communicating to your spouse that you appreciate her, that you appreciate him. And you say the words, and you'll find your spouse is shocked. I would just love to be a fly on the wall when a husband says to his wife, you know, I never said these words to you, but you know, you take care of the kids and the house and everything. I'm really just so appreciative. Oh? What'd you say? No, I just said I'm so appreciative. What'd you say? I just, you know, what you do for the kids and everything. What do you want? What do you want to do? You want to leave for a week? What do you want? Anyway, try it. But try it. And if you think I'm kidding, I'm not. There's not a single couple, by the way, I don't think a man or woman, I don't think there's a single spouse who ever said, yeah, my spouse fully appreciates me. And it's unfortunate. Now, it's okay for teenagers because they're kids. But we're not kids, and we've got to work on it. And again, the simplest way to work on it is you make a list, and then for the next 30 days, you spend 10 minutes reading the list. And you begin training yourself. You begin controlling the flow of consciousness. And you recognize that that's the biggest yesod in Yiddishkeit, controlling your thoughts. That shapes your moods, it shapes who you are. And you have to understand that this is the secret to a successful marriage. You blow up the balloon, you work on it in the positive, and you figure out what the pins are. One of the biggest obstacles to a successful marriage is judging your spouse by your standards. And like that guy who looked at his wife on the chair like she's some kind of crazy dame, if you judge your spouse from your world, you're not being fair. And you have to climb into their world, and one of the best ways to do it is say the words, that's strange, again, not to your spouse. Say it to yourself, that's strange, and then you open yourself up to the question, why is she behaving that way? Why is he doing that? And suddenly you have a different sense of things, you have a different understanding. And I want to close with one story. This story, the first part, I'll bet you know, and the second part of it, I almost guarantee you don't know. Here we go. Rav Zalman Auerbach, at the Levaya for his wife, he said as follows. He got up and said a hesped, and when it was finished, he said, it's a minog b'Yisrael to ask mechila. It's accepted practice to ask mechila, to ask forgiveness. It was the last time you're going to speak to the mace, and it's an accepted practice. It's almost universally done that you ask mechila. I'm not going to ask mechila for my wife. Because there was nothing in our marriage that we ever did one to the other that I would have to ask mechila for. I'm not asking mechila because there was nothing to ask mechila for. That's where he ended his hesped. Okay, that's a famous story. Anyway, there was a young man who was newly engaged, and he decided he's going to learn Shalom Bayis from none other than Shlomo Zalman, because clearly Rosh Hashiva understands the secret. And he went over to Shlomo Zalman, and he asked Rosh Hashiva, could Rosh Hashiva please share with me? And Shlomo Zalman was very, very generous with his time. He spent time with this young man and gave him some eitzes, gave him some thoughts. A second time, this young man came in again. Rosh Hashiva sat with him and spent some time explaining. Da, da, da. Okay, very nice. Young man gets married. 6 months later, young man's at a wedding, and there's Rosh Hashiva Auerbach. And Shlomo Zalman Auerbach notices him and says, "Oh, mazel tov, you got married. Huh? Tell me, how's your marriage? How's?" The fellow says, "Mei menuchos, great. There's nothing we disagree on. Everything is perfect." Shlomo Zalman says, "You got married? You married 6 months? Yeah. How's your marriage? Mei menuchos, waters of tranquility. We see everything the same way. We're always in agreement. It's great. It's good." Shlomo Zalman said, "You got married? You got married? 6 months ago, you got married?" And it was clear that there was something missing here. So the young man says to Rosh Hashanah, "I understand, Rosh Hashanah, what's so unusual? Didn't Rosh Hashanah say at the Levaya, his wife, that there was nothing to ask the Mechila for? So listen to these words. Rosh Hashanah said, don't you understand? Of course we viewed things differently. Of course I looked at it this way and she looked at it this way. There were many, many times when we disagreed. But it was how we handled the disagreements. We never fought, never raised our voice. But it's impossible for two human beings not to view things differently, not to have different values and different importance. If you say to me you view things the same way, it can't be. And I think what the Shiva was telling us what is a yesod. Of course you're going to view things differently. There's going to be lots of stuff. It's how you deal with it, how you approach it. And that's ultimately the secret of success. May Hashem grant us tremendous hatzlacha in that.